For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the deaths of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war.
Ay me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now hath seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jut upon the innocent and aweless throne.
What is a man? Sure he made us with such large discourse, looking before and after, gave us not that capability and godlike reason to fust in us unused.
O my dear father, restoration hang thy medicine on my lips, and let this kiss repair those violent harms that my two sisters have in thy reverence made.
I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the sceptre and the ball, the sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the throne he sits on, nor the pomp that beats on the high shore of the world.
This is the mighty history of the British Empire, a people living on a tiny island in the North Atlantic Ocean. Built an empire that circled the earth and brought freedom and education to languishing millions. This empire was blessed by Almighty God and one of his best educated teachers, William Shakespeare. Shakespeare has educated some of the greatest leaders of all time, such as Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill.
We shall never surrender.
Our troubled world needs a fresh crew of nation-building leaders. Are you ready to step up to the challenge? Welcome to the exciting classroom of Shakespeare's Royal Education with host Dennis Leap.
Well, hello again, everyone. Welcome back to Shakespeare's Royal Education. And I do have one comment today, and I have to apologize. It's coming from Texas, and this is one of my firm listeners. And basically, she writes me, this is from Texas, and she says, I'll try sending again a comment. I'm guessing the one below didn't arrive at your desk back in January. I am loving to hear this life and death of King John. Although the demise of Arthur was hard to follow, a reminder of these actions in biblical times really were done, and of our own government problems in God's Israel today. Can't wait for the remainder of this act and the finale. So, her name is Iris. So, Iris, you're listening. In some ways, I'm glad this came today because this program is going to deal with basically Arthur. And so I think you did it the right way. And so, she also, this is her one that I missed. She says, hello, I just have to send you a comment now that we're through with King Lear. So this happened a little while ago. And she says, don't get me wrong, I did enjoy the study and the parallelism to our own country's downfall, but now I can follow each act of King John since I have acquired the complete works of William Shakespeare. And that was the Cambridge edition of 1936. So I'll tell you, Iris, you got a good copy if you have all the works in the Cambridge edition. And that is not very cheap. And she said, I came by it very cheap as it was heading for discarding. So good job. Having absolutely no damage to it other than the loss of its jacket, I am now able to follow every act, every scene. I am excited. I look forward to every program. Shakespeare and the best literature now focused on our great Churchill. Keep up with this challenging work. And she says, a devoted member in coastal Texas. And, she also says, P.S., you had also given me information on the very old tales from Shakespeare with Charles and Mary Lamb. I cherish this little book. So, thank you for writing. Sorry for the delay, but actually, the delay was perfect. And so, someone is looking out for us. But it's just exciting to hear that people get excited about Shakespeare. And of course, I think all of you know that I'm very excited about Shakespeare. And, you know, it's something where you have to grow in your love for it. It's not easy. But once you really get into it and get the hang of it, it really does add a lot of interest and color in your life. And you can see that some of the plays that Shakespeare wrote are still have themes that are very important about government and everything today. Now, for today's program, I want to move on to Act 4, Scene 1. And but I do want to maybe go back just briefly and talk a little bit about Act 3 before we get into Act 4. So on our last podcast, we did end Act 3, Scene 4, with a startling conversation between Louis. Remember now, Louis is the Dauphin of France, or he is Philip's son, and Pandulf, the papal legate. And I think everybody probably got the idea from me that I do not like Pandulf. he's just a character, but what he represents is honestly false religion. And so let's review what was said between these two. And I think it's just a really interesting conversation. But it also reveals, I think, a lot about the Holy Roman Empire, and it reveals a lot about the Catholic Church and what they were doing at this time. So turn with me now to just to page 64. And if you remember from last time, and I think it's really good to kind of review this before we get started on the new act. But remember now, Constance is a big part of this scene. And remember now, Constance is Arthur's mother, and she is very distraught that John has won the war against France and has also taken control of Arthur. And so again, if you really look at this play, and if you look at all of the actresses that have played Constance, it is probably one of the most difficult roles in Shakespeare to play. And there have been some very famous actresses that have done it. And Constance is definitely not happy with what's going on with her son. Now, again, even if you remember back just a little bit, she went after Philip because Philip, he broke his truce and his connection to John. I mean, they had a pact that they were going to support each other. And, of course, Pandulf ruined that. And then also Constance she took on Pandulf. And she said, you didn't help anything here. She was really frustrated because John not only won the war against France, but now he has control of Arthur. And that's very, very upsetting to her. And remember, they had her bind up her hair because she came in there looking like this wild woman. And then as she leaves the stage, she unbinds her hair, showing that she has a wild outrage. And so I'm just going to read, this is page 64, this is line 101. She unbinds her hair. In other words, she makes herself look absolutely wild again. And she says, I will not keep this form upon my head when there is such disorder in my wit. And so she's really disturbed emotionally. She's disturbed mentally because she wants to save her son. She goes, oh, Lord, my boy, my Arthur, my fair son, my life, my joy, my food, and all the world, my widow comfort and my sorrow's cure. And then she exits. She goes off the stage. And then King Philip is right there, and he says, I fear some outrage, and I'll follow her. And so Philip, I think, does have some certainly affection for her, and he's concerned, what is she going to do to herself? You know, there's a lot of people, if they lose a son like that, or if they get into a problem like that, they're just on their way to suicide. And then Philip says, I fear some outrage and I'll follow her. And then he exits. And so what's interesting now, the only two people left on stage are Louis, the Dauphin, and Pandulf. Essentially, because remember now, Philip lost the war with John. John wins the war. John is already back in England, and he does have Arthur. He's got him right with him. And so then Lewis, and that's the Dauphin, he starts to say, there's nothing in this world can make me joy. Life is as tedious as a twice-told tale, vexing the dull ear of a drowsy man, and bitter shame has spoiled the sweet world's taste that it yields naught but shame and bitterness. And so he says this in front of Pandulf. And the thing is, it's probably like the worst situation he could be in to now be alone with Pandulf. And essentially Pandulf just looks at him and says, before the curing of a strong disease, even in the instant of repair and health, the fit is stronger. Evils that take leave on their departure most of all show evil. What have you lost by losing of this day? And he says, look, what have you lost, Lewis? You're not a king. You're the Dauphin, but you're not a king. You haven't lost. And he says, Lewis comes back and says, all days of glory, joy, and happiness. And he said, you know, he's not happy for his dad. He's not happy that his dad lost the war. And it was bad news for France. And then Pandulf goes on and says, well, if you had won it, certainly you had. And he says, no, when fortune means to men most good, she looks upon them with a threatening eye. 'Tis strange to think how much King John hath lost in this which he accounts so clearly won. And so one of the things that you see here as we get through these last couple acts, Pandulf really wants to wreck John's life. He does not want John to be king of England. And the reason is he doesn't want to submit to the Pope. And so Pandulf is there to make sure he gets John either on his knees, you know, worshiping the Pope, or we get him off the throne. And then he goes on to Lewis. He says, are not you grieved that Arthur is his prisoner? And so here, Lewis is alone. Lewis is telling him this was not a happy day. Remember, he just married Blanche just within days. She's not happy. And so he's not happy. And then, Pandulf is already saying to Lewis, look, what really has John lost? I mean, what he won, but what else could he have lost? And then, of course, he brings up Arthur. He says, are you not you grieved that Arthur is his prisoner? And Lewis says, as heartily as he is glad he has him. And so essentially, Pandulf then goes after Lewis, and he says, your mind is all as youthful as your blood. Now hear me speak with a prophetic spirit. So essentially, here Pandulf, he's supposedly a priest or a cardinal in the Catholic Church. He says, okay, I'm going to be prophetic here. He says, even the breath of what I mean to speak shall blow each dust, each straw, each little rub out of the path which shall directly lead thy foot to England's throne. So in some ways, he's saying to Lewis, look, you're a dumb kid. You're too youthful. Don't you realize that you could really affect John? You could take the throne. You know, if he has Arthur, you know, what's he going to do with him? He goes on to say, thy foot to England's throne, and therefore, mark, John has seized Arthur, and it cannot be that whiles warm life plays in that infant's veins, remember, Arthur's 10, that the misplaced John could entertain an hour, 1 minute, nay, one quiet breath of rest. So he's saying, look, John has seized Arthur. How long do you think he's going to keep him alive? And so in other words, Arthur is going to get kicked out to replace John. But you, because you're married to Blanche, you have a chance to take the throne through Blanche, because Blanche is his niece and she's part of John's family. And so if you realize that, Pandulf, such a schemer. I mean, he's there to wreck John. That's what he's there to do. And he said, The misplaced John should entertain an hour, 1 minute, nay, not one quiet breath of rest. A scepter snatched with an unruly hand must be boisterously maintained, he gained, and that he stands upon a slippery place makes nice of no vile hold to stay him up. That John may stand, then Arthur needs must fall. So be it, for it cannot be but so. But the thing is Lewis, he doesn't think like Pandolf. He says, but what shall I gain by young Arthur's fall? And then Pandolf, I could just, you know, if you really could see a good actor, he'd just go, oh, what am I doing with this kid? He says, you, in the right of Lady Blanche, your wife, may make all the claim that Arthur did. And then Lewis says, and lose it, life and all, as Arthur did. So Lewis might be a little bit down, but he's not stupid. You know, he doesn't want to tangle with King John. And, you know, Arthur is supposedly going to lose his life. And then Pandolf, he just keeps going here. He says how, and this is top of page 66. I may not read all of this. He says, how green you are and fresh in this old world. John lays you plots. The times conspire with you. For he that steeps his safety in true blood shall find but bloody safety untrue. This act so evilly born shall cool the hearts of all his people and freeze up their zeal. So he's still talking about the fact that John, you know, has probably already killed Arthur. And he's saying that none so small advantage shall step forth to check his reign, but they will cherish it. No natural exaltation in the sky, no scope of nature, no distempered day, no common wind, no common event, but they will pluck away his natural cause and call them meteors, prodigies, and signs, abortives, presages, and tongues of heaven, plainly denouncing vengeance upon John. So he's saying, look, John is, it's almost like what people are saying about President Trump all the time. Oh, we got him now. He's out. He can't get ahead. You know, and certainly Mr. Stephen Fleury on the Trumpet Daily does a better job of hitting those issues. But then Lewis says, maybe he will not touch young Arthur's life, but hold himself safe in his imprisonment. And then Lewis is saying, hey, how do you know that John's killed him? But Lewis is, he's a young man, but I don't think he's anti-John. I don't think Philip was really anti-John either, but Pandolf got in the middle of it. And Pandolf scared Philip, being the Pope's legate, that, you know, if he didn't stand up for the Catholic Church, he would be in trouble too. But then Pandolf says, oh, sir, when he shall hear of your approach, if that young Arthur be not gone already, even at the news he dies, and then the hearts of all his people shall revolt from him and kiss the lips of unacquainted change and pick strong matter of revolt and wrath out of the bloody fingers ends of John. So he's saying, look, you know, what you have to understand, Lewis, is Arthur's probably already dead. And that when everybody finds out about it, they're all going to go against him anyway. And so he just trying to paint this picture so black about John. And he goes on to say, this is Pandolf. And again, remember now, these two are just alone. And he says, and oh, what better matter breeds for you than I have named? The bastard Falconbridge is now in England ransacking the church. And so remember, this is Richard. This is the Richard the Lionheart's illegitimate son. And essentially, somehow, Pandolf has found out that he's taking the money away from, you know, the church. He's ransacking the church. And, you know, the thing is, you know, the Catholic Church was, you know, getting a lot of money from the people. He says, if but a dozen French were there in arms, they would be as a call to train 10,000 English to their side, or as a little snow tumbled about anon become a mountain, O noble dauphin, go with me to the king. 'Tis wonderful what may be wrought out of their discontent, now that their souls are topful of offense. For England go, I will wet on the king. Now, that's a different word that we would use, but essentially, Pandolf is saying, look, I'll go with you, Lewis, and I'm going to incite the king. I'm going to go after King John, so I'll be there right with you. And he said, you need to go and you need to do this. So Pandolf, you know, his first mission was to come and get their cardinal into the position of, you know, the bishop of the church or the archbishop of the church. And now look what his real plot is. Get rid of King John. That's what's going on. And then Lewis says, strong reasons make strange actions. Let us go. If you say aye, the king will not say no. And so that's how that Act 4, Scene 1 ends. No, Act 4, I'm sorry, that's Act 3, Scene 4. And so that's basically, we're trying to get rid of Act 3 because it's the longest one in the whole play. Now, this is what is really interesting to me, and I think I may have mentioned it. And so now Act 4, Scene 1, and we're going to now spend the rest of the time in this on King John in these last couple acts. But here's, and it's Hubert and the executioners. Now, if you remember, and I think I even said that I thought it was just sickening to realize that King John was going to execute Arthur. He wanted to get him out there. And of course, Hubert, remember now, is the, he was the guy up on the rocks, the stones, leading into Angiers. And he becomes a big part of the play. But so Hubert, remember, promised King John, yeah, I'll execute him, you know. And so he said, we love each other, I'm going to do it. So then Hubert, he says, heat me with irons. This is Act 4, Scene 1. It's page 67, by the way. Heat me with these irons, and look, thou stand within the arras. When I strike my foot upon the bosom of the ground, rush forth, bind the boy which you shall find with me, fast to the chair, be heedful hence, and watch. So this is Hubert's plan. And remember, in some ways, King John really finagled him and organized him to become an executioner. So the first executioner says, I hope your warrant will bear out the deed. He says, Hubert, uncleanly scruples, fear you not, look to it. So here, even the executioners are saying, this is a kid. what do you want us to do with this guy? And then he says, young lad, come forth, I have to say with you. And so then Arthur enters. He says, good morrow, Hubert. And then Hubert says, good morrow, little prince. And Arthur says, as little prince, having so great a title to be more prince as may be, you are sad. So Arthur looks at Hubert and he says, you don't look so good. Are you sad? And Hubert says, indeed, I have been merrier. And Arthur says, mercy on me, methinks nobody should be sad but I. Yet I remember when I was in France, young gentlemen would be as sad as night, only for wantonness. But my Christendom, so I were out of prison and kept sheep, I should be as merry as the day is long. And so I would be here, but that I doubt. My uncle practices more harm to me. He's afraid of me, and I of him. Is it my fault that I was Joffrey's son? No, indeed, it's not, and I would to God I were your son, so you would love me, Hubert. Think about Arthur. He's not so dumb. He's suspecting something's going on, and he's got his hand right in Hubert's heart. He said, come on. Then Hubert says aside, if I talk to him with his innocent prate, he will awake my mercy which lies dead. Therefore, I will be sudden and dispatch. And then Arthur sees him again. He says, are you sick, Hubert? You look pale today. In sooth, I would you were a little sick, that I might sit all night and watch with you. I warrant I love you more than you do me. So this kid is really working on Hubert. And then Hubert aside, which is just to the audience, his words to take possession of my bosom. Read here, young Arthur, shows a paper. And then aside, he says, how now, foolish room, turning despiteous torture of out of door, I must be brief, lest resolution drop out at mine eyes and tender womanish tears. Can you not read it? Is it not fair writ? And then, Hubert is really, he's in tears. He doesn't want to kill this kid. And Arthur says, too fairly, Hubert, for so foul effect. Must you with hot irons burn out both mine eyes? So this is what his instructions were, to take out his eyes. And he says, young boy, I must. And then Arthur says, and you will? And Arthur, and I will. I said, Arthur gets there and he says, have you the heart? When your head did but ache, I knit my handkerchief about your brows. The best I had, a princess wrought it for me. So he said, Arthur, wait. I've seen you sick. I've seen you, you're feverish, and you're sweating. And I took my own embroidered handkerchief, and I washed your brows. I took all that sweat off you. And he said, I did never ask it you again. and he said, and with my hand at midnight held your head, and like the watchful minutes to the hour, still and anon cheered up thy heavy time. He said, look, I'm for you. Saying, what lack you, and where lies your grief? Oh, what good love may I perform for you. Many a poor man's son would have lain still, and never have spoke a loving word to you. But you at your sick service had a prince. Nay, you may think my love was crafty love, and call it cunning. Do you and I, if you will, if heaven be pleased that you must use me ill, why then you must. Will you put out mine eyes, these eyes that never did nor never shall so much as frown on you? And then Hubert says, I have sworn to do it, and with hot irons I must burn them out. And so Hubert, we have to get through this. You're going to see who wins before it's over. Then Arthur says, ah, none but in this iron age would do it. The iron of itself, though heat red hot, approaching near these eyes, would drink my tears and quench this fiery indignation, even in the matter of mine innocence. Nay, after that, consume away in rust, but for containing fire to harm mine eyes, and you more stubborn hard than hammered iron. And if angel should have come to me and told me Hubert should put out mine eyes, I would not have believed him, no tongue but Hubert's. And he had given the executioners earlier that when he stamped his feet, they were to come in with the cords and the hot irons. So Hubert stamps his feet and he yells, come forth, and the executioners come in with the cord, irons, etc. Do as I bid you do. And Arthur says, oh, save me, Hubert, save me. My eyes are out, even with fierce looks of these bloody men. And then Hubert says, give me the iron, I say, and bind him here. Arthur then says, alas, what need you be so boisterous rough? I will not struggle. I will stand stone still. For heaven's sake, Hubert, let me not be bound. Nay, hear me, Hubert, drive these men away, and I will sit as quiet as a lamb. I will not stir, not wince, not speak a word, nor look upon the iron angrily, but thrust but these men away, and I'll forgive you. Whatever torment you do, put me to. And so Arthur is really pretty smart here. He's saying, look, if you want to put my eyes out, put my eyes out, but don't let these beasts put my eyes out. And then Hubert says, go stand within, let me alone with him. So the first executioner, he says, I am best pleased to be from such a deed. So even the executioners don't want to do it. Then Arthur says, alas, I then have chid away my friend. He hath a stern look, but a gentle heart. Let him come back, that his compassion may give life to yours. And then Hubert says, come, boy, prepare yourself. He said, Arthur said, is there no remedy? And then Hubert says, none but to lose your eyes. And then Arthur says, oh heaven, that there were but a mote in yours, a grain, a dust, a gnat, a wandering hair, any annoyance in that precious sense. So it's pretty interesting that that's basically based on the scriptures. You know, if you have a mote in your eye, don't pull out a thorn or maybe a piece of wood out of someone else's. And so Arthur says, oh heaven, that there were but a mote in yours, a grain, a dust, a gnat, a wandering hair, any annoyance in that precious sense. So he said, you know, think about that. If you had a mote in your eye, and now you're going to put a hot iron poker in my eyes. Hubert says, is this your promise? Go to, hold your tongue. Hubert, the utterance of brace of tongues must need want pleading for a pair of eyes. Let me not hold my tongue. Let me not, Hubert. Oh, Hubert, if you will, cut out my tongue so I may keep my eyes. Oh, spare mine eyes, though to no use but still to look on you. Lo, by my troth, the instrument is cold and would not harm me. And Hubert says, I can heat it, boy. No, in good sooth, the fire is dead with grief, being created for comfort to be used in undeserved extremes. See else yourself, there is no malice in this burning coal. The breath of heaven hath blown his spirit out and strewed repentant ashes on his head. Hubert then says, but with my breath I can revive it, boy. And Arthur said, and if you do, you will but make it blush and glow with shame of your proceedings. Hubert, nay, it is perchance will sparkle in your eyes, and like a dog that is compelled to fight, snatch at his master that doth tear him on. All things that you should use to do me wrong deny their office. Only you do lack that mercy which fierce fire and iron extends, creatures of note for mercy-making uses. Then Hubert says, well, see to live. I will not touch your eye. For all the treasure that your uncle owns, yet I am sworn, and I did purpose, boy, with the same very iron to burn them out. And Arthur says, oh, now you look like Hubert. All this while you were disguised. He says, peace, no more ado. Your uncle must not know, but you are dead. I'll fill these dogged spies with false reports, and pretty child, sleep doubtless and secure, that Hubert for the wealth of all the world will not offend thee. And then Arthur says, oh heaven, I thank you, Hubert. And Hubert says, silence, no more. Go closely with me. Much danger do I undergo for thee. And so guess who won that contest? You know, Arthur, he is not dead yet, or is not blind yet. I was so disgusted to think that Arthur was going to get killed, but he doesn't. He doesn't get killed. So let's just go on now to skip over to page 85. So I'm skipping ahead to Act 4, Scene 3. And essentially, Hubert saved Arthur. But historically, what we know is Arthur still died. And here's how. And this is how Shakespeare writes it. So this is Act 4. Scene 3, Arthur is on the walls. So here's Arthur. He says, the wall is high, and yet I will leap down. Good ground, be pitiful, and hurt me not. So Arthur is still, he's still under house arrest. And he's at a castle. And he said, good ground, be pitiful, and hurt me not. There's a few or none to do know me. If they did, the ship's boy semblance with disguise at me choir. Quite, yes. I'm afraid, and yet I'll venture it. I'll get down, and do not break my limbs. I'll find a thousand shifts to get away. As good to die and go as die and stay. So he leaps down off these walls. And then he says, oh me, my uncle's spirit is in these stones. Heaven take my soul, and England keep my bones. Now that's great poetry. But he dies. So he escaped from getting his eyes burned out, but then essentially he dies. And that's how Shakespeare deals with the history. And essentially what Arthur did is he fell off a rooftop in England, and he died. So he's definitely out of the picture. And so, to me, it's really pretty interesting there. Now, let's just continue here. Arthur's dead. Then enters the scene then as Pembroke, Salisbury, and Bigot. And so essentially, we're at a castle wall. We're back in England. And you remember, Salisbury is one of the big lords. And Pembroke is one of the big lords and says, "Lords," this is Act 4, still Scene 3. He says, "Lords, I will meet him at St. Edensbury. It is our safety that we must embrace this gentle offer of the perilous times." And Pembroke says, "Who brought that letter from the cardinal?" And he says, "The Count Melham, a noble lord of France." So you see, Pandulf is now, he's actually working with the English to work against King John. And he's really it's far more corrupt than just getting the cardinal appointed. So it says, Salisbury says, "The Count Melham, a noble lord of France, who's private with me of the Dauphin's love, is much more general than these lines improve. Bigot, tomorrow morning, let us meet him then, Salisbury, or rather then set forward, for it will be two long days' journey, lords, or ere we meet." And then you have the Richard come in. And again, remember now, Richard is the illegitimate son of Richard the Lionheart. And he comes on, he says, "Once more today, well met, distempered lords, the king by me requests your presence straight." And so remember now, Richard, the illegitimate Richard, he's really for the king, and he's really got some sense about him, and the king is using him. Now Salisbury says, "The king hath dispossessed himself of us. We will not line his thin, bestrained cloak with our pure honors, nor attend the foot that leaves the print of blood where it walks. Return and tell him so. We know the worst. Whatever you think, good words, I think were best." And Salisbury says, "Our griefs and not our manners reason now." Then Richard says again, but there is a little reason in your grief. There's for reason you had manners now." So the Richard is saying, "You guys better wake up." He says, sir, impatience has his privilege." And then the Richard says, "'Tis true, to hurt his master, no man else." Salisbury says, "This is the prison." And he sees Arthur. "What is he lies here?" And then Pembroke says, "O death, made proud with pure and princely beauty, the earth had not a hole to hide this deed." So essentially, what you see here is these lords, along with Richard, they see the body of poor Arthur. And they heard that they all know that John wanted to get rid of him. But John had nothing to do with it. He did it himself. And so he says, "Murder, as hating what himself hath done, doth lay it open to urge on revenge." And so then one of the other lords, Bigot, it says, "Or when he doomed this beauty to a grave, found it too precious, princely for a grave." And then this is not what's really has gone on. "Sir Richard, what think you? Have you beheld, or have you read, or heard, or could you think, or do you almost think, although you see, that you do see, could thought without this object form such another? This is the very top, the height, the crest, or crest unto the crest of murder's arms. This is the bloodiest shame, the wildest savagery, the vilest stroke, that whatever wall-eyed wrath or staring rage presented to the tears of soft remorse." And then Pembroke says, "All murderers past do stand excused in this. And this soul, so sole and so unmatchable, shall give a holiness, a purity to even the unbegotten sin of times, and prove a deadly bloodshed but a jest, exampled by this heinous spectacle." And then Richard says, "It is a damned and a bloody work, this graceless action of a heavy hand, if that be the work of any hand. And Salisbury said, if that be the work of any hand? And so, yes, he said, we had a kind of light that would ensue. It is the shameful work of Hubert's hand, the practice and the purpose of the king, for whom obedience I forbid my soul, kneeling before this ruin of sweet life. And so he's saying, look, this all happened because of Hubert, and this is the practice and purpose of the king. And he said, from whose obedience? He says, I forbid my soul. In other words, this lord is saying, I'm not going to obey the king if he's going to kill young people. I'm not going to obey him. And he goes, then kneeling before this ruin of sweet life and breathing to his breathless excellence, the incense of a vow, a holy vow, never to taste the pleasures of the world, never to be infected with delight, nor conversant with ease and idleness till I have set a glory to this hand by giving it the worship of revenge. And then Pembroke and Begas say, our souls religiously confirm thy words. And so, in other words, they're going to take vengeance on the king and on Hubert as well. So then Hubert says, lords, I am hot with haste in seeking you. Arthur does live. The king has sent for you. And Salisbury says, oh, he is bold and blushes not at death. Avaunt, thou hateful villain, get thee gone. I am no villain. And then Salisbury draws his sword. Must I rob the law? And he says, your sword is bright, sir. Put it up again. Salisbury says, not till I sheath it in a murderer's skin. Stand back, Lord Salisbury, stand back, I say. By heaven, I think my sword's as sharp as yours. I would not have you, Lord, forget yourself, nor tempt the danger of my true defense, lest I, by marking of your rage, forget your worth, your greatness, and nobility. And then Bigot says, out, dunghill, darest thou brave a nobleman? Hubert says, not for my life, but I yet dare defend my innocent life against an emperor. Salisbury says, thou art a murderer. Do not prove me so, yet I am none. Whose tongue soever speaks false, not truly speaks, who speaks not truly lies. Pembroke says, cut him to pieces. Keep the peace, I say. Stand by, or I shall gall you, Falconbridge. And then Richard says, thou art better gall the devil, Salisbury. If thou but frown on me, or stir thy foot, or teach thy hasty spleen to do me shame, I'll strike thee dead. Put up your sword betime, or I will so maul you and your toasting iron that you shall think the devil is come from hell. And Bigot says, what wilt thou do, renowned Falconbridge? Second a villain and a murderer? And then Hubert says, Lord Bigot, I am none. Bigot, who killed this prince? Hubert, 'tis not an hour since I left him well. I honored him, I loved him, and will weep my date of life out for his sweet life's loss. Trust not those cunning waters of his eyes, for villainy is not without such room. And this is Salisbury now, and he sees Hubert. Hubert is crying. He says, for villainy is not without such room, and he long traded it in, makes it seem like rivers of remorse and innocency. Away with me, all you whose souls abhor the uncleanly savors of a slaughterhouse, for I am stifled with the smell of sin. And then Bigot says, away toward Bury, to the dolphin there. So Pembroke says, there, tell the king he may inquire us out. And so the lords leave. And Richard's there says, here's a good world, knew you of this fair work, beyond the infinite and boundless reach of mercy, if thou didst this deed of death, art thou damned, Hubert? And Richard is saying, look, Hubert, you got to explain this. And then Hubert says, do but hear me, sir. And then Richard says, how? I'll tell thee what. Thou art damnedest as black. Say nothing is so black. Thou art more deep damned than Prince Lucifer. There is not yet so ugly a fiend of hell as thou shalt be if thou didst kill this child. And Hubert says, upon my soul, if thou didst this but consent to this most cruel act, do but despair, and if thou once accord the smallest thread that ever spider twisted from her womb, will serve to strangle thee. A rush will be a beam to hang on thee, or wouldst thou drown thyself? But put a little water in a spoon, and it shall be as all the ocean, enough to stifle such a villain up. I do suspect thee very grievously. And so you know, they've got all these things against Hubert, and Hubert really did save the boy. He said, if I in act, consent, or sin of thought, be guilty of the stealing that sweet breath which was embodied in this beauteous clay, let hell want pains enough to torture me. I left him well. And then Richard, the illegitimate, says, go bear him in thy arms. I'm amazed, methinks, and lose my way among the thorns and dangers of this world. How easy dost thou take all England up. From forth this morsel of deadly royalty, the life, the right, and truth of all this realm is fled to heaven, and England now is left to tug and scramble and to put by the teeth the unowned interest of proud swelling state. Now for the bare-picked bone of majesty, doth dogged war bristle his angry crest, and snarleth in the gentle eyes of peace. Now powers from home and discontents at home meet in one line, and vast confusion waits as doth raven on a sick fallen beast. The imminent decay of wrestle prompt, now happy he whose cloak and cynature can hold out this tempest. Bear away that child, and follow me with speed. Out to the king, a thousand businesses are brief in hand, and heaven itself doth frown upon the land. And so in this act, you can see that by accident, Arthur is really gone. And what was he doing climbing up on a roof anyway, you know, and then jumping down? But now, here we have the Catholic Church involved again. So enter King John and Pandulf with attendants. And then King John says, thus I have yielded up into your hand the circle of my glory. And then Pandulf, giving John the crown, and he says, take again from this my hand as holding of the Pope your sovereign greatness and authority. So it looks like what when John first came back, and historically when he got back to England, he had himself re-kinged so that they could prove to the Catholic Church, definitely, I'm king, you're not. And now they have Pandulf giving John the crown. He says, take again from this my hand as holding of the Pope your sovereign greatness and authority. So somehow Pandulf and John have made this agreement. John says, now keep your holy word, go meet the French, and from his holiness use all your power to stop their marches, for we are inflamed. Our discontented countries do revolt. Our people quarrel with obedience, swearing allegiance and a love of soul to stranger blood, to foreign royalty. This inundation of mistempered humor rests by you only to be qualified. Then pause not, for the present time is so sick. The present medicine must be ministered, or overthrow incurable ensues. And again, now we're in the English court, and Pandulf is right there. And Pandulf says, it's my breath that blew this tempest up upon your stubborn usage of the Pope. But since you are a gentle convertite, my tongue shall hush again the storm of war and make fair weather in your blustering land. On this Ascension Day, remember well, upon your oath of service to the Pope, go I to make the French lay down their arms. And so this unique turn of about here, where Pandulf now is actually, he actually seems like he's going to be involved. And now the French were coming after the English. And now he's saying, look, I'm going to go back and have the French lay down their arms. So King John then says, is this Ascension Day? Did not the prophet say that before Ascension Day at noon, my crown I should give off? Even so I did suppose it should be on constraint, but heaven be thanked, it is but voluntary. And then enters Richard. than the illegitimate. He says, "All Kent hath yielded, nothing there holds out but Dover Castle. London has received, like a kind host, the Dauphin and his powers. Your nobles will not hear you, but are gone to offer service to your enemy. In wild amazement hurries up and down the little number of your doubtful friends. Would not my lords return to me again after they heard young Arthur was alive?" It says, "They found him dead and cast into the streets, an empty casket where the jewel of life by some damned hand was robbed and taken away." And King John says, "That villain Hubert told me he did live." And then Richard says, "So on my soul he did, for aught he knew. But wherefore do you droop? Why look you sad? Be great in act, as you would have been in thought. Let not the world see fear and sad distrust govern the motion of a kingly eye. But stirring as the time by fire with fire, threaten the threatener and outface the brow of braggart honor. So shall inferior eyes that borrow their behaviors from the great grow great by your example and put on the dauntless spirit of resolution. Away, and glisten like the god of war when he intends to become the field. Show boldness and aspiring confidence. What shall they seek the lion in his den and fright him there and make him tremble there? Oh, let it not be said, forage and run to meet displeasure further from the doors and grapple with him ere he comes too nigh." And so essentially, we've moved now on to Act 5, and we're at Act 5, Scene 1, getting ready to go back, continue on to Act 5, Scene 2. Now, this is really, really quite interesting that the whole turn of events is, you know, King John is coming back to England because he won the war with France. Now France is stirred up again with England. And it seems like you've got Pandulf in the middle of it. And then King John says, "The legate of the Pope hath been with me, and I have made a happy peace with him, and he hath promised to dismiss the powers led by the Dauphin." And so this whole thing has gone ahead now where remember, Pandulf had talked to the Dauphin and wanted him to take the crown. And so you can see that Pandulf is playing both sides of the camps. You know, he's acting like, oh, wow, he's now a friend with King John. And it's a question you want to ask. Why does the church get involved in politics? You know, why it just thinks it can do that. And the bastard says, "O indigenous league, shall we, upon the footing of our land, send fair play orders and make compromise, insinuation, parley, and base truce to arms invasive? Shall a beardless boy, a cockroach silken wanton, brave our fields and flesh his spirit in a warlike soil, mocking the air with colors idly spread, and find no cheek? Let us, my liege, to arms. Perchance the cardinal cannot make your peace, or if he do, let it at least be said, they saw we had a purpose of defense." And then King John says, "Have thou the ordering of this present time. Away then with good courage, yet I know our party may well meet a prouder foe." And so essentially what we have here is, this is Richard the Lionheart's illegitimate son is actually giving King John some really good, you know, information, really good, even a lesson. Hey, stand up. Stand up for England. You know, let's get going here. And so it's really quite interesting, you know, about this play. And again, remember now, all Shakespeare's plays only have 5 acts. So we're really getting close to the end of this play. So if we look at Act 5, Scene 2, what we have is the Dauphin is entering. He's armed, and he's with Salisbury, Mallon, Pembroke, Bigot, and soldiers. And so you get the feeling that people want to get rid of King John. And so, I'll just read the first few lines here. This is page 95. This is Lewis. He says, "My Lord Manlin, let this be copied out and keep it safe for our remembrance. Return the precedent to those lords again, that having our fair order written down, both they and we pursuing our over these notes, may know wherein we took the sacrament and keep our faith firm and inviolable." So that's really very interesting there. And the point is, notice what Lewis is saying, is that they're standing up for the Catholic Church. You know, they took the sacrament, and they're going to keep their faith firm and inviolable. And then notice it says, "Salisbury, upon our sides, it never shall be broken." And so here you have some of the English lords are in agreement with the Dauphin. It says, this is Salisbury saying, "Upon our sides, it never shall be broken. And noble Dauphin, albeit we swear a voluntary zeal and unurged faith to your proceedings, yet believe me, Prince, I'm not glad that such a sore of time should seek a plaster by contempt, revolt." And so they know what's going on. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Now, next time, we will finish Act 5, and we'll end the play, and then we will also then identify which Shakespeare King's play we're going to do next. So please write me any comments you may have to comments@kpcg.fm. You can also comment at my Twitter page, and it's Shakespeare's Royal Education. Now, if you do not have the book King John, you will be able to find a good used copy of King John at abebooks.com, and some copies there will be under $5. So thanks for joining me next time as we advance our royal education.
You've been listening to Shakespeare's Royal Education on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.